In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Score yet another one for conspiracy theorists. I've lost track of the total score, but it's got to be something like 173-0. Back in September 2021, the Biden administration tried to quietly change the definition of a vaccine for the simple reason that the COVID vaccines did not stop people from getting infected, nor did they stop people from spreading COVID. In other words, they weren't vaccines, since those two key functions are what vaccines are supposed to do. At best, they were therapeutics because they might lessen the severity of symptoms. You know what else does that? Cough drops. One CDC employee got caught complaining in an email that the then current definition was being used by right-wing pandemic deniers to argue that the mRNA vaccines are not vaccines. Well, they weren't vaccines, because if they were, there'd be no reason to change the definition, would there? When they got caught changing the definition, the Biden administration and the left-stream media propagandists tried to pretend it was no big deal, except it most certainly was, since changing that definition had legal implications. Because if the COVID vaccines were not vaccines, then they could not be mandated. This matters because the Ninth Circuit just ruled that the mRNA vaccines, the COVID vaccines, were and are not vaccines. Because, getting back to that definition, they did not prevent somebody from getting COVID and they did not stop somebody from spreading the disease. And because they are not vaccines, they cannot be mandated. This ruling will now allow the Los Angeles School District employees' lawsuit against the district to proceed. This matters because what happened is still not water under the bridge. It never will be until it is dealt with, not behind closed doors, but right out in the open where people admit their involvement in creating these problems and, most importantly, are held accountable. It is one thing for government bureaucrats to make judgment calls and recommendations in the middle of emergencies when they are completely in the dark and there are a lot of unknowns. That was not the case with COVID. They knew what they were doing, and it was by design. This matters because there are a tremendous amount of lawsuits in our near future. How many people were forced out of their jobs because they refused to take an experimental vaccine? How many people took the vaccine to keep their job, and now they've got that ticking time bomb running around their system? How many people took that vaccine because they were mandated to and suffered any number of health problems? And how many people took the vaccine and haven't experienced health problems yet, but will in the near future? If people start suing their employers for vaccine mandates or any number of other mandates that they were forced to do, especially if they have health problems or a loved one died, what do you think millions of lawsuits could do to businesses and the economy? What do you think could happen to our country if millions of people sued the government? And that's just what's easily foreseeable. We don't know what we don't know, but it undoubtedly means that there will be a lot of potential chaos in the days ahead. Perhaps this is why Biden isn't trying very hard to get reelected, because he knows the next administration is going to have an awful lot to wrestle with, and it might be better for him to just go off into the sunset where he is already sundowning, judging from his mental health of late. To keep this country held together, we are going to need strong leaders who will hold people accountable, and that requires people of integrity who will also hold themselves accountable. To talk about Dr. Fauci's lies, COVID, and that Ninth Circuit ruling, I'd like to welcome Gina Maselli. She is an expert cultural and lawful rights commentator, always exposing the lawful angle of situations, and she's also the author of the book, Free Dumb, that's D-U-M-B, Free Dumb, The Patriot's Playbook to Restoring Your Rights and Freedom. Gianna, it's great to talk to you today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for spelling the book out. People need to understand what it means.
Yeah, so a great title there. So you have a lot of different interests there, you know, just looking through your website and looking at some of your shows. But what started you down the path to research information on common law?
Well, the day that the pandemic shutdowns happened is my birthday, so it's easy to remember. And I was going out to have a good time. I don't know why I did not hear about the shutdown, but I went to a Ruth's Chris and I'm ready to have a good time for a 6:30 reservation. And they said we had to leave by 8:00. I'm like, why do we have to leave? And like, because of the shutdown. I'm like, what is the shutdown? And I went home and I looked, and my first thoughts, I'm in my apartment all by myself. Like, the government can't do that. They can't tell businesses to shut down. And my first communication about it was with a waiter. And I've been a waiter when I was young. They can't take 2 weeks off of work for 15 days. How many people can actually do that? And so I was like, well, what are they trying to do? And I dug in, and the rest is history. I never stopped since that day. That would be March 16th of 2020.
So in your bio, you say one has to study Supreme Court rulings in addition to a lot of trial and error to fully grasp the power of the people. And as you alluded to there, COVID saw you study the difference between the rules, codes, and statutes, which you say are not laws. Were you surprised at what you found that wasn't constitutional, in your opinion?
Absolutely, because I am the daughter of a Chicago police officer and a legal secretary, and I vividly remember I'm of an age where when we were in grade school, we had to pass a constitution test to graduate from grammar school. And I vividly remember learning, I have rights, like it turned me into a monster. And so it was just always something that was sort of in my household. And this was just such an egregious violation of our rights. I say to people who don't see the light, if the mandate, which, what is the mandate? That was the beginning. Mandate is not a law. If the mandate were that you wore a leopard print thong on your face, would you have complied? Because what is the difference? Chinese pesticide-laden cotton covering your nose.
Yeah, yeah.
And it starts to wake them up a little bit, though.
So, like you, I'm also a Gen Xer, and I remember having to pass all those same kinds of tests about the Constitution, all these other civic issues. I guess I sit here and I'm just shocked at how poorly understood civics are, and law and Constitution and all the rest in the broader society, but certainly with the most recent generation. Do you have kids that are in schools or have gone through schools?
No, I don't have children. I do wear my 1776 bling necklace. I sell it on my website if anyone wants one, because it starts conversations. And I run into younger people, because young girls, they like bling, and they'll compliment my necklace. But then they'll say, what does it mean? And I'm just shocked, and I'm just sort of guessing, but I think that they don't ever hear about their rights. They've never heard about them. And in the current culture, they're only hearing about the LGBTQ rights, like your right to use a different bathroom, and they think these are rights, and that's why they don't actually understand what the rights are, that your rights are inherent, inalienable, they come from God, they come from the Bible, and they are for your freedom and independence. I don't think they know what these mean at all.
No, I've just been shocked by how poorly educated the next generation is, actually the last couple generations, really, about these
right.
kinds of issues. So you and your co-host, Scott Bernard, who was a law school graduate, you guys have an online program, The Inalienable Show, on Rumble. And together, you guys have put together The Inalienable University to teach people about how they can exercise their rights. Can you give our audience a quick example of a right that they ought to be exercising but aren't, or don't even realize that they have?
Absolutely. Our top two flags that we wave in the world, if we could make a difference in the culture, would be a couple of things. One, we want you to surrender your driver's license and your state license plates, give them back to the Department of Transportation, because unless you operate in commerce, meaning you are paid to be a driver, you have no obligation to apply for that contract. They're both a contract and a tax. And you have the right to travel, so says the Supreme Court. That's part of your First Amendment and liberty. And we want you to quit the IRS. The IRS is a government, it's not even like a government agency. It's a private agency. And you are not a taxpayer until you sign that first form. Scott has never signed an IRS form in his entire life. Sorry, I'm with my dog. And I quit the IRS in 1999. It does not matter if you're self-employed or you're a W-2 employee. If you own a business, you have no obligation to ask the state for a license to conduct private economic activity. Those are a good start, and they pretty much freak people out. And sometimes the energy of that is too much. But when you dig into the knowledge, which we teach you, the light bulb goes off. I have a great post on Twitter today where Scott sometimes goes on a great rant. So if you're on X or Twitter, it's pinned to my profile. It's called Legal Fockery, F-O-C-K-E-R-Y. People know what I'm trying to say with that, but I have to be polite for Google. But Scott's on a great rant about what the IRS actually is. And legal and lawful are not the same thing. Legal is what you agree to. So if you agree to be a taxpayer and then you lie about your income or you don't pay what you agreed to pay, then that becomes illegal. But the IRS is unlawful because you have a right to private economic activity. So if you choose not to participate, there's nothing they can do about it, and there's nothing you should be afraid of. So we teach you how to exit the contract.
Well, you know, if people are interested, you guys do have a 3-day free trial, and I'll put links to that on iSmartRadio.com on today's show page, which is 14-24. Let's go and take a break. Coming up, Fossey lied, people died. We'll talk about that next with Gianna Maselli. And welcome back. We're talking to Gianna Maselli. She is an author, podcast host, and speaker. She is the curator of the Brookstone Freedom Coalition Firm Curriculum. And so what exactly is that?
Well, Scott went to law school because he was railroaded by the government. That's his story to tell. He did not go to school like most 22-year-olds that are exiting college this month and decide to go become a lawyer. He got turned on to information because of his life experiences and decided to go learn. So he went to law school, and that's where he came to see the difference between supreme law and the statutes and codes. And so the statutes and codes are intended to regulate commerce and corporations. They're not intended to regulate the living man, and that's for the common law. So we teach people how to exercise their rights under the common law. That means it goes along with the Constitution. The more you learn about this, our founding fathers were geniuses. They should be revered, and it's a shame where we are today.
So if God
could wave a magic wand and sit in front of Donald Trump, he would want Donald Trump to facilitate letting the entire United States of America learn that the statutes only apply to living men and women and not, I mean, I'm sorry, only to corporations and not living men and women. If they would just let the secret out, that would relieve prisons, but then you're disrupting the scheme of the bar card holders. And look at all the January 6th people.
Yeah.
I have only heard one story where a guy chose to have a trial, a bench trial, and he stood up and said, "They let us in, so I'm not guilty." And he was found not guilty by the judge, but everyone else is offered deals. And I've seen a lot of the warrants. The warrants are completely unlawful. And those people are spending time in jail.
Yeah.
They don't have to be.
There's a lot going on there with January 6th, but that's beyond the purview of this week's show. We got so much else to talk about.
Right.
On your website, which is GiannaMaselli.com, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Again, today's show page is 14-24. Just look for the links there in the show notes at the bottom of the page, GiannaMaselli.com. So on that website, you've got a post titled, "Fossey Lied, People Died." And in that, you say, when it came to COVID restrictions and mandates, that the legal standard is informed consent. In opposition to that standard, governments used emergency powers delegated to them under the guise of putting this public health care crisis to force things like masks, social distancing, closing of businesses, and, of course, the infamous COVID vaccines. I think we're just on the threshold of lawsuits to figure out those two conflicting legal standards. Are you kind of thinking that as well?
Yes, there's a wonderful attorney. I don't know if he has the bar card, but he's been so wonderful. His name is Michael Yoder, Y-O-D-E-R. And since the beginning, he has been defending military people and first responders, nurses and people like that, teachers, you know, those kind of careers that were fired for saying no, when they always had the right to say no. I have not heard of a single suit that was being lost. I've only heard the opposite, that people have been awarded their jobs back and back pay and damages for losing their jobs over that.
Well, as far as your discussion of informed consent, I really like this key element that you point out. Quote, in most systems, healthcare providers have a legal and ethical responsibility to ensure that a patient's consent is informed. And I remember discussing that during the whole COVID thing with a couple of different doctors. But yet at the time, we saw time and time again where doctors and nurses just swallowed wholesale whatever the government told them. So why do you...
They were paid as well. They were paid.
Yeah, absolutely. So why do you think...
You heard that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So why do you think that standard, that legal and ethical responsibility healthcare workers had, why do you think that standard just got thrown out the window?
Money. Unfortunately, we have good against evil. We're in a spiritual battle right now. If you're not for God, you're against God.
Absolutely.
And to close down the world, and there's so much disruption that we'll see for years, like so many businesses going out of business and closing down. You know, I always feel like a system has to come down and it will be rebuilt, but we're going to be uncomfortable in the meantime. I mean, I'm not hurting, but a lot of people are financially hurting.
Well, back in January.
Reset, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So back in January, Fauci gave some testimony behind closed doors, which was only recent release transcripts of it. But he has now since given public testimony along those same lines. But effectively, the main thrust of what he said, the main takeaway really, was that they basically made up the rules. And none of it had any real grounding in science, not masks, not social distancing, and so many of the other mandates. But sadly, I think, like so many governmental bureaucrats, I don't think he can be personally sued. As part of your exploration of common laws and rules and codes and statutes and all that, do you know if there are any ways around that firewall to go after these bureaucrats and hold them accountable?
Yes, you can sue him under the common law. He stands there naked as a man. I don't mean that literally, metaphorically.
Thank goodness.
In the common law, he can consult an attorney, but he can't bring one into the case. I'm currently suing the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and a judge for violating my rights. So that's how I have come to experience this, and that's what I know. You can sue anybody because it's outside of their qualified immunity. They cannot violate your rights.
Well, you had kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but as we saw through the COVID, it turns out that the scientists that we were supposed to be able to trust, and again, this is on your website there, that they were paid $700 million in what you label as commissions, although I think a better word would be bribes. Clearly something needs to be changed here, where you've got these governmental bureaucrats profiting to the tune of millions of dollars. But I don't think that's something we can just kind of chip away at. I think there needs to be some kind of wholesale changes there. You mentioned this reset. Do you have any thoughts on how to do that and what that would look like?
I sure do. We cannot control what they do. I mean, we know what Donald Trump's fighting. There's drain the swamp. But we have to stand on our own. And a lot of people will argue with me on social media. They're waiting for politicians. I say, you're waiting for politicians to do something for you that you won't even do for yourself. So when I say quit the IRS, quit the DMV, quit asking the government for permission, you're cutting off the head of the snake. And so we start locally. We don't need to ask the county for things. We don't need to ask the state for things. And it'll all work its way up. You have to cut off the head of the snake.
Well, it's time for a break here. It turns out there was a recent decision from the Ninth Circuit of all places that definitely opens the door to vaccine lawsuits. We'll talk about that next with Gianna Maselli. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking to Gianna Maselli. She is an expert cultural and lawful rights commentator exposing the lawful angle of situations. Her website is giannamaselli.com. That's G-I-A-N-N-A Maselli, M-I-C-E-L-I.com. And to make sure that's a little easier for you, we'll put that up on iSpyRadio.com on today's show page 14-24. So I mentioned going out of that break there about the Ninth Circuit. They just had this ruling that said the COVID vaccine is not a vaccine, that the shot did not prevent infection nor stop transmission, which are two key elements of what a vaccine is. In fact, if you remember, they had changed the definition of vaccines in order to call these vaccines. But effectively, the court said it's not a vaccine, it's a therapeutic, and which means that you cannot mandate these things. So this means that a lawsuit that the Los Angeles School District employees had brought against the school district can now proceed with that lawsuit. So this was a huge ruling, and in my opinion, really opens the floodgates to additional lawsuits surrounding pandemic, not just the pandemic vaccines, but the mandates as well. What are your thoughts on all of this?
I don't know if this was planned. I very much have been saying for a long time that words have meaning in the law. And I was saying things like this a couple years ago, that they have definite meaning. How is this a vaccine if it didn't prevent anything? But remember, they were also gaslighting us on the mainstream news that, oh, everyone had to get it so you can keep other people from getting it. So I don't know if there's something going on that was pre-planned, but it has very interesting timing during the election year.
Well, one of the interesting aspects of this, too, is that the lawsuit overruled a judge at the U.S. district level who had applied the precedent standard on when it comes to mandatory vaccines. I've heard other legal experts mention this as well as the source for mandatory vaccines, that yes, the government does have the power and authority to be able to force these things on you. And that was a 1905 Supreme Court ruling, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, and it had to do with mandatory smallpox vaccinations. And a little bit worrisome thing about this particular ruling is that it doesn't get rid of all vaccine mandates, just that it says this mandate does not work because this is not a vaccine, and so therefore it can't be forced on people. But do you think this opens the door to the Supreme Court revisiting this notion of being able to force vaccines on people?
I would never allow for that. I don't see how they can do that. I would never allow for that. There's no way. That contradicts the Nuremberg Codes.
Yeah. Well, 1905 was certainly a very different time from where we are now in 2024. Right. They certainly did not understand disease the same way that we do, and certainly not transmission the same way that we understand these things now. So I think the Supreme Court is going to have to revisit this, because when you can force vaccines on people, what else can you force them to do? I mean, it just seems like that opens the door to anything.
There's no way we don't have body autonomy. No way.
Well, I don't know if the pharmaceutical companies will necessarily bear any brunt of this. Your co-host, right. I mean, because they made like, what, $700 billion, some crazy amount. Your co-host has a background in corporate law. Does he have any thoughts on that as to where this all might go?
Yes, because he would say, oh, my dead body, are you touching me with that poison?
I mean, in terms of suing the pharmaceutical companies.
Yes, we love to take people to federal common law claims. I'll tell you why. You know why? Because they can never fight it. All they always do is everyone's just programmed to go to a bar card attorney and hire an attorney, but you can't bring an attorney to federal common law. So you win by default. It's easy as can be.
Well, my guess is, as far as people trying to sue pharmaceutical companies through the normal routes, and I'd like to maybe explore that a little bit more with you, that in terms of the common law lawsuits, my guess would be is that they'll just simply declare bankruptcy, because trying to absorb $700 billion worth of damages, that'd be pretty hard to do. You know, but they will just transfer their intellectual property to some other company or maybe a subsidiary if they can get away with that. But I'm just concerned that nobody's going to get paid as a result of these, even though we know a lot of people have died from a result of these vaccines. My brother died of this because of a vaccine booster. So I just get worried that the pharmaceutical companies who did all this and unleashed this horror on people, and I think we're going to see decades of people dealing with medical problems because of these, I just get worried that there's just going to be an escape from this.
Right. I'm not an expert that advanced yet, because we're in new territory for sure.
Well, as far as trying to deal with this down the road, I think you're a Trump fan.
Yeah.
Do you think that he will ever acknowledge that he was misled on these COVID vaccines? Because for the longest time, he would be out there trying to brag about these vaccines and how it was so great that they were able to rush these things through and all the rest. But I really think that part of the healing process and the trust building process is being able to acknowledge when you made a mistake. Do you think he will ever get to that point?
You know, have you seen the news where people are like, oh, the military made them and they did this to, they say they forced him to, I don't, it doesn't make sense what they're saying, but people are trying to figure out why that did happen. I think he does admit mistakes, and I just can't tell what he's doing right now. I judge his confidence as far as what's going on, and he's pretty confident.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's in touch with the people. He definitely talks to the people.
Yeah. Well, I certainly
he's out among the public.
I certainly remember him looking very surprised when he mentioned how great it was to get those vaccines in there, and yet he got booed at a rally, and I think that really got his attention.
Right, I remember that too.
Yeah,
right.
Unfortunately, we are up against the clock with you. We've been talking with Gianna Maselli, and we'll certainly link up her website on iSpyRadio.com on today's show page 14-24. Gianna, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's a lovely interview. I appreciate when someone takes the time to actually look at my website.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'd like to welcome Dennis Lithicum now back to the show. He is a soon-to-be former state senator and now current Republican candidate running for Oregon's Secretary of State. Dennis, it's great to talk to you.
You bet, Mark. It's always good to have your show come up on my calendar. You've got such a great audience, and your questions are so timely that it's really fun to be on a show like this. And so hopefully today follows up with every much bit of fun as the last time.
Well, now you've set very high standards that we're going to have to meet, and that's always kind of threatening.
And I realize I was digging a hole there, so so I look forward to this terrible menu that you have in front of us.
There you go. So, as I mentioned, you're about to be a former senator there from District 28, and in some off-air conversations that we've had previously, I know that you were considering running for several different potential offices. So why did you decide to run for this particular office over some other options?
Well, I think this particular office is vital to the integrity of the state of Oregon. There are three offices in particular that have three Republican candidates that I think would make a big difference. And these are the Attorney General Will Lathrop is a Republican candidate there. The State Treasurer Brian Boquist is the candidate there. Mm-hmm. And I am the candidate for Secretary of State. And these three offices in concert can control and protect the Democrat majority from scrutiny. And I think you're aware, I write this newsletter where I'm always trying to scrutinize the public sector with the same skepticism that I think we no longer use in a robust fashion in the legislative body. Proponents for any piece of legislation come in, they bring their army of supporters, and they all sit down and they all tell the same story. But unfortunately, that's all it is. It's a story. It's a marketing ploy. They get the millions or billions of dollars from the taxpayers, and they go spend it wildly on the streets and are pretending all the while that they've done great things for the people of Oregon. I'm rather skeptical of that storyline. And I think it's worthy of investigation. So, and oftentimes they get to that storyline and that, you know, Democrat majority that has been so prevalent in Oregon political bodies for so many years, is through the potential of voter malfeasance, let's say, versus fraud that scares people. And we don't know. The truth is, you and I don't know how much voter fraud or non-fraud exists because the Secretary of State's office denies people access to accurate information in a timely basis. We don't even end the legislative or the legislature doesn't end the election on Election Tuesday. They end it 8 days later. And it's like, well, this is weird. In the old days, we could hand count all these ballots. Now we have computers that are supposed to be super spiffy. They have optical recognition software. They've got precision. They can roll through more ballots than you and I could ever finger through. And yet they can't do it for 8 days. Yeah. And you have to wonder, well, this, what's going on here? And my claim is that we'll never know what's going on until we get a competitive set of eyeballs, somebody who's a skeptic of the story plan that we're all marching to this tune, and somebody needs to hear a different drummer.
Well, absolutely. And if they're sure of its accuracies, then hey, prove it. You know, let somebody else look. I think that would be great to open that door. And so let's find out whether or not they're so accurate. So,
And this is a common, you say that, and everybody knows this. This is common for audits in the private sector. This is why you audit, you know, when somebody makes a mistake on the scoreboard at the baseball game, people go, hey, wait, that shouldn't be a 2, that should be a 5, you know, and they fix the scoreboard because people are watching and paying attention and recognize there's been an error. It doesn't have to be purposeful, it doesn't have to be fraudulent, but if there's a mistake, sure, there's a mistake and it should be investigated.
Sure, just human error. So we'll dig a little more deeply into what exactly the Secretary of State does in the next segment, but let's just sort of start with kind of a general sort of overview. As you look at the landscape of what needs to be done in Oregon and the various powers that the Secretary of State has, what would some of your priorities be?
Well, yeah, if you look at the website for the Secretary of State's office, they have a lot of, you know, phrases that don't really mean too much, but they want to concentrate on integrity through, you know, things like diversity and transparency and accountability. But those are really hard metrics to get a handle on. What does it mean to have integrity and be accountable when we've jettisoned all traditional standards for what is normal, what's appropriate, and how we should be conducting ourselves? And so I think we have to pay attention to this rulemaking authority from the Secretary of State, how the Secretary of State's office actually conducts public affairs, how they review agency and ensure that agencies at the executive level mostly are complying with law, with rule, with regulations, and not taking advantage of the public, who basically has very little power in the state of Oregon, and they actually should have the ability to hold these public agencies accountable.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So, okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up, we'll take a look at what the Secretary of State does and ought to be doing and look at some of the powers and authorities that they have. We're talking with former Senator Dennis Luthcombe, who is running for the Secretary of State as a Republican. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about the Secretary of State office today, and we're doing that with Senator Dennis Luthcombe, who's about to be a former senator from Senate District 28, which is mainly down in the Klamath Falls area, but it runs all the way from the Klamath border up to outside of Bend in Central Oregon. And, you know, with a district that big, you're certainly used to traveling around the state, aren't you?
Yeah, we travel everywhere. Everywhere we go, we travel. And so it's part of the territory, but it's really good because I get to meet people from every little community in southern Central Oregon. When I'm in Salem and moving up through Portland, I meet all of those metro folks as well. And they're all concerned about the transparency and a genuine empathy for their divergent views and their perspective on Oregon's economy.
You know, you had mentioned something in that previous segment about oversight over the Secretary of State. And, you know, Shamia Fagan was forced out of office after it turned out she had a side gig with a marijuana company that she was supposed to be overseeing and getting basically back to her payments. And, you know, the Secretary of State is not appointed. I think it is appointed position in some states, but here in Oregon, it's independently elected. So to prevent out of control secretaries of state, really the people of Oregon need some kind of oversight over the Secretary of State. What would that look like? I mean, and does anybody now have any kind of oversight? Because the Secretary of State does a lot of oversight. Who has oversight over the overseers?
Well, yeah, there's the famous question, you know, who watches the watchers is the problem that we face in Oregon, especially since this responsibility has been damaged greatly by the prevailing single-sided mindset within the executive agencies and legislature that has been poisoned with this socialism that comes with Democrat majorities. And because they are so far out of touch with reality, so far out of touch with the public, they continue to march down that highway, I think almost beyond repair. Their image was so tarnished under Shamia Fagan, and that she resigned, as you mentioned, in total disgrace. But nobody seems to mind. The newspaper doesn't even notice. And what was the guy who was, I found a blank spot in my brain, the guy who brought the $500,000 to Wyden, and he passed the portions of that on to the Kotek and to the Senate leader and
whatever.
Oh, you're
talking about the cryptocurrency guy.
Yeah, the cryptocurrency guy, the FTX, I guess is what it was called. And nobody, you know, does anybody even know, is he serving jail time? You know, was he convicted? And the answer is yes, but nobody knows it. It's not on anybody's horizon.
Oh, but if that was a Republican Secretary of State and Republicans getting all of that dirty money, it would be nonstop on the newspapers.
That's right. And that's my point. So this one-sided, you know, view of the world is a tampered view. It's like looking into a circus room mirror and seeing nothing but distortions. Yeah. And these distortions aren't an accurate view of the real world. So the Secretary of State fulfills four essential services. The first is elections and election integrity. And the Democrat legislature has mucked with that a fair bit in the past several years. And so that will be something I don't have any ability to impact, but I can certainly use the bully pulpit to call attention to those things and hopefully spawn momentum to get some of those legislative acts changed.
Well, the so other on thing, that, before we go on to the other ones, on that, do you, as the Secretary of State, have the power to open some of these public databases that people have tried to sue to get access to, or are you prevented from doing that?
Yeah, no. One of the things that I would stop immediately is the MDM initiative that comes from the Secretary of State's office. That's misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation, where they're using what they call artificial. And the reason it's artificial is there is no intelligence apart from human intelligence. It takes human mind, human understanding, and human knowledge to understand what intelligence looks like. The only thing that this computer system can do is find a widget in a bowl of, you know, corn kernels. But that's nothing magical. They can just sort through more corn kernels than any other human could, and therefore we think it's a master at finding widgets. It doesn't know what a widget is or what a widget is used for, and therefore it has no intelligence. It can't put any right, wrong understanding or moral.
It does know that whatever Republicans say about the elections is clearly misinformation, disinformation, or malinformation, whereas whatever the Democrats say about elections, that's fine. It does know that. So there's that.
Well,
anyway.
Yeah, and that's poisoning the well. You feed it the information you want it to turn back, and of course it turns back the information you fed it. And so this I cannot break the contract. I can't terminate the contract because there's a termination clause within the contract. But there is no legal requirement for me to disseminate the reports and the information and the volumes of data that are inside of that.
I would think you would certainly have the power to open the door in terms of the negotiations that led to those and the decisions that are being made as a result of the information that the artificial intelligence is feeding to the humans and what responses that has all engendered. I mean, you could certainly do that, couldn't you?
Oh yeah, certainly. That would be an audit in its own right, an audit of Logically AI, the corporation that's in charge of this. This corporate entity has, I think, 36 different subdivisions throughout the United States, mostly operating and running in, get this, Democrat-controlled states.
Shocker.
Where the governor is a Democrat or the legislature, Senate and House are Democrat majority, enterprises.
It's always surprised me how Democrats who claim they're all about democracy don't actually want democracy in action, which means giving people the freedom to vote as they would please. All right, we are up against a break here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Senator Dennis Lithicum. He is running for the Secretary of State here in Oregon as a Republican. And we're back. We're in the final segment now with Dennis Lithicum. He is the former senator from District 28, and he is now running as the Republican in the race for the Secretary of State here in Oregon. And so, Dennis, we were talking a little bit there about what the Secretary of State does. And just to kind of summarize, this is off the Oregon Secretary of State's page itself. It says the Oregon Secretary of State is Oregon's chief elections officer, chief auditor, and oversees the state archives and the Oregon corporate division. And the Secretary of State also serves as one of three members of the State Land Board and as the chair of the Oregon Sustainability Board. You know, big excitement there on that last one. But we dealt with the elections. Just to move on to the next one, chief auditor, because this is something that I think is so drastically needed here in Oregon. And audit power being one of the powers that you have. There are some school districts all across the state that are running into multi-million-dollar deficits in terms of budget problems. Some schools are actually looking at being either combined or even shutting down. These budgets have hit them so hard. They've certainly had hundreds of teachers being laid off. And this is despite the legislature giving them a 10% boost in this most recent biennium. So where on earth has all that money gone? I mean, is that something that you can audit and look into as Secretary of State?
You bet. You bet. People ought to think of audits like a kind of proficiency tests or standards for all the various agencies. There's any number of contracts, grant recipient requirements, grant dispersal requirements, and other, you know, material bookkeeping requirements for what was that money designed or destined for within the school district or Department of Education? Was it used appropriately to accomplish those purposes? And then what material deficiencies come out of reviewing that? I think Oregon's children, I was on a radio show this morning on KMED, and we talked about the typical K-12 bill per year is $30,000 for an Oregon student. And yet private schools are typically one third of that, close to $10,000, if not less. And so that's $20,000 that has the potential to be of being misspent. Where is it going? What is it accomplishing? Is it being used for any good purpose? And
you could save the state an awful lot of money just by contracting out with private schools.
And people ought to think of this like in the old days. You'll remember this. Both you and Carla will remember this. We got report cards, and they kind of ranked your proficiency in math or science or English, and you got an A or a B or a C. And those proficiency exams were first thrown out by executive order from Governor Brown, and then the recent last year's appointment for the secretary for the Department of Education continued to dismiss proficiency requirements for schools. Now think about what that looks like in an audit. If we don't know how the kids are performing, then how in the world do we know how schools are performing? How do we know about their compensation pay grades and what they're receiving for doing a job that nobody can see the result of? If you were working at an auto shop and the auto shop said, just show up, we don't care if you ever fix a car, then how could they justify giving you these enormous raises that the legislature continues to give these school districts where nobody's performing to standard.
Right.
What
right.
standard are we going to utilize?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the audit power of the Secretary of State, how far down does that audit go? I mean, you mentioned previously about these organizations that get millions of dollars and are out there on the streets claiming they're doing all these great things. Does that audit look at what was or was not delivered? Or does it just look at simply the dollars and cents accounting of it instead of the common sense of it all?
Yeah, the common sense of it all or lack thereof belongs solely on the legislature. And so the oftentimes many things are vague or without any kind of specificity, and the Secretary of State can't do anything about that. But what they can look for is material deficiencies given the requirements X, Y, and Z, either coming from the Secretary of State, or excuse me, from the legislature or the secretary of a department, DEQ, ODOT, Department of Education, etc. All of those agencies will have internal rulemaking, and there'll be obligations within there to do this, that, and the other thing. And then how those monies, mostly financial resources, get allocated is the responsibility for Secretary of State perusal.
Well, let's say that in one of those audits, you find that money at these school districts was misspent. What then? Are people held responsible? And unfortunately, we only got about a minute here with you.
No, responsibility is sorely missing, and that's why we're in the trouble that we're in the state of Oregon.
Wow. That is astounding that people get these millions of dollars, go out there and blow it on all sorts of things, and yet nobody is held responsible. Well, Dennis, we are definitely going to have you back. There's so much more to explore here with you. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
You bet. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to coming back soon.
You know, it suddenly occurs to me, I never once asked Dennis for his website in case people wanted to check out his campaign. I believe it is electdennis.com, electdennis.com. And if I find out otherwise, I will link it up on this week's show page. Again, that is ispyradio.com, show 14-24. You know, I opened the show talking about the need for strong leaders who will hold people accountable. But to get them elected, we have got to get out the vote. Just a reminder from last week, Turning Point Action is working to make that happen. If you haven't checked out their app yet, we'll put another link to that on this week's show page, and I would highly encourage you to listen to last week's show, which you can also find at ispyradio.com. That is show 14-23, talking about chasing ballots. Winning is great, but to get there, it takes action, because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.